Radio Prague News.
WikiLeaks founder has taken part in a Czech film festival. Talks to save the coalition ruling Prague City Hall have broken up, and Petra Kvitová has qualified for the WTA singles Singapore semi-finals. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has defended the whistleblowing site in a video conference appearance at Jihlava's documentary film festival on Thursday night. Assange, currently a virtual prisoner in the Ecuador embassy in London, brushed off charges that WikiLeaks concentrated solely on US and Western secrets. He told his Czech audience that US authorities were the biggest generator of secrets in the world. WikiLeaks had revealed secrets from Russia, China, Peru and Kenya as well, he said, admitting, though, that the site's main language is English. Russian member of the punk band Pussy Riot, Maria Alonchina, also took part in the debate, saying she hoped Assange would be released soon from his 3 years in the embassy, evading an extradition order to Sweden. Recriminations have followed the breakup of talks aimed at salvaging the three-way coalition currently governing Prague City Hall. Talks collapsed Friday after the grouping of three smaller parties quit talks with ANO representatives and those from the Social Democrats. The reason was the non-appearance of Prague Mayor Adriana Krnáčová, who is ill. The three coalition leaders said they would give time for the ANO party mayor to recover. Negotiators from the other parties said this was a sign that the grouping of Greens, Christian Democrats and the Stan party were already in talks over an alternative coalition. And staying with Prague City Hall, a report says it's renting out a large part of its real estate portfolio at prices below their market value. That finding has been arrived at by the Institute for Planning and Development. The report by the Institute said that Prague is losing out between 100 and 300 million crowns a year through price rents for office, commercial and retail real estate that it owns. Prague City authorities own around 1,000 non-residential properties, with around a half of them unused. The Institute is the capital's main body for urban planning and architectural development. The Czech government is planning to release 100 million crowns by the end of the year to help countries worst hit by the refugee crisis. A further 68 million crowns for the same purpose should be found for next year, according to a proposal to be put to the Czech cabinet on Monday. Part of the money will contribute to EU funds established to help refugees in Syria and Africa. Funds will also be directed towards the World Food Programme and the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, which is providing a large part of the help in Syrian camps. The Czech state-owned rail track authority has said it can find no record of the influential Prague politician Radmila Kleslova being paid by it. The announcement followed news that the former head of the ANO party in Prague was paid to the tune of 95,000 crowns a month for her consultancy services. Czech radio cited an agreement in its possession showing Kleslova worked directly for a former director of the rail authority. That director, Jiří Kolář, said the lack of documentation might have been due to the fact that most of the reports by Kleslova were given in face-to-face meetings. Kleslova stepped down as deputy chairwoman of the ANO party last week and has signalled she wants to resign her top position in the Prague party organisation as well. The worst aircraft accident in Czechoslovak history is being recalled on its 40th anniversary today. The accident happened on October 30th, 1975, in thick mist when a Yugoslav passenger aircraft approached Prague airport to land. Around a dozen kilometres short of the landing strip, the DC-9 crashed, with 79 of the 120 passengers killed. The circumstances of the crash were never fully cleared up, but a faulty altimeter is believed to be one of the main causes. Most of the passengers on board were Czechs and Slovaks returning from holidays. And finally, in tennis, Czech women's number one Petra Kvitová has qualified for the semi-finals of the WTA finals in Singapore in spite of losing her last singles match. Kvitová has fellow Czech Lucie Safarová to thank for the semi-final place against Maria Šaparová after she beat Germany's Angelique Kerber in straight sets. Kvitová earlier lost to Spaniard Garbine Muguruza 4-6, 6-4, 5-7 and had to wait for the last group game to know her fate. I'm Chris Johnston and that was the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, we speak to one of the Czech volunteers helping at the refugee camp on Croatian borders. We have the roundup of this week's business news, and later on in the program, we look at the Czech perspective on the famous Sherlock Holmes novels. That's in a fresh edition of The Arts. All that coming up, so please stay with us. As the influx of refugees heading for Western Europe continues, an increasing number of volunteers are trying to help the refugees stranded in camps on Croatia's borders. There are now reported to be around 100 Czechs working in the area. While some of the teams are supported by humanitarian organizations such as People in Need, others have come at their own initiative. Journalist Petra Pospěchová has just returned from the Brežice camp located on Slovenia's border with Croatia. I asked her about the situation there and why she and her friends chose this particular destination.
When we were deciding where to go, we used one of the volunteer maps on the internet, which kind of show places where the help is more urgently needed, where is the biggest lack of volunteers, where is the biggest lack of supplies. And at the moment when we were going, Brežice was just obviously in the biggest trouble, so we chose Brežice.
So can you describe the situation in the camp? What did it look like? Who were the people in the camp? How many were there?
Even volunteers who have been to other camps and even the refugees themselves said that they haven't experienced something so terrible as Brežice. It was meant for 2,000 people, and there were six of them. Packed on one each other, many kids, a lot of women. It was really cold, only mud on the ground, so it was kind of impossible to sit normally. Few tents, which were usually used for the kids and the families, but not all of them could get in. And the police at the beginning when we arrived was really tough on them, so it was like some concentration camp, honestly.
There were humanitarian workers present at the camp from Red Cross, United Nations, Doctors Without Borders. What was your impression of their work? Did they have the situation under control?
I'm very sad to say it, but Red Cross really was good with the medical staff. They more or less covered the medical issues, but that was it. If it comes to food, water and blankets, which they had loads of them, loads, they just completely failed. They have been waiting all the time only for the orders from the people from above, and they just let the people starve for 12 hours. Sometimes we got food to the people after 1.5 days. It was a big disappointment for me, honestly.
So what exactly did you do there? What kind of help did you offer, and what was most needed?
From home we brought some warm clothes, which our friends made as a donation. We had a full van, and the same the other volunteers who came from Switzerland or Germany. And we also had some money, so we have been buying blankets repeatedly. We have been buying bread, it was metric cents of them during the 4 days. It was hectoliters of water we bought. Locally, it was sold out all the time. And usually we had to negotiate with the police and the army to allow us to the refugees, which took quite a lot of energy and time. But at the end of the day, they usually let us. So we started distributing first with the kids and women. You know, it was maybe 20,000-30,000 people we served during the 4 days. So it was a lot of work and a lot of food and a lot of water and a lot of blankets because it was really cold. Really cold.
Are you planning to return there if you can?
Definitely. We have very good news now that Brežice and Rigonce are closed because it was really the worst camps. And the Slovenian government managed to move the people to another camp with the tents. So probably the next way to Balkans will not be so tough. But we definitely go again in November because there's a lot of people coming.
Journalist Petra Pospěchová describing her experiences with refugees on the Slovenian-Croatian borders. But now I'm joined in the studio by Daniela Lazarová for the summary of this week's business news.
Analysts are predicting that the Central Bank Board will decide to extend forex interventions until 2017. At its upcoming meeting on November 5th, the CTK news agency reported Friday, analysts cited by the news agency say that in its November forecast, the bank is likely to predict a slower inflation growth, which has been the main factor behind its intervention policy to keep the crown weak against the euro. In earlier statements, the central bank said interventions might end in mid-2016. Interest rates are expected to remain at an all-time low.
The European Commission has rejected a bid by four EU member states, including the Czech Republic, for an exception for a broader application of the reverse charge in order to prevent tax evasions. Czech Minister of Finance Andrej Babiš, who has long been pushing for EU member states to be able to decide for themselves what goods and services will be subject to reverse charge, said he was disappointed by the outcome. According to the Ministry of Finance, the Czech Republic was ready to test the possibility of a broader application of the method with the help of a pilot project similar to the one prepared by the European Commission in 2008.
A Czech company has been rated by Deloitte as the fastest-growing technology company in Central and Eastern Europe. The software company Simplity got top ranking on the Technology Fast 50 list, followed by the mobile payments company Skycash Poland and last year's overall leader, Hungarian online real estate business Salas. Interestingly, Simplity was sixth in last year's Rising Star category when it was still too young to feature in the Fast 50 ranking itself. Four other Czech firms made it into the first 50.
Logistics company Geis CZ is planning to build a new transshipment point in Prague in the first quarter of 2016. According to the company's marketing department, it also plans a substantial investment into the sorting technology in the new transshipment facility. Geis CZ reported revenues from the sale of its own products and services totaling over 2 billion crowns in 2014.
The Millionaire Gallery, which sells celebrity memorabilia, this week opened a branch in Prague, the fifth in the world after Miami, Key West, London and Dubai, the CTK news agency reported. According to the head of the Czech branch, collectors and investors will be offered a minimum of 60 items at a time. Besides, customers can order artifacts from the depository in Miami or have new memorabilia tailored on request. The items now on display include a collection of photographs with the signatures of all the actors who ever played James Bond and a collection of Grand Slam titles won by golf champion Tiger Woods. The most expensive item on offer is the prototype of Steve Jobs' first keyboard, priced at 1 million crowns.
Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, where it's now time for a fresh edition of The Arts with Jan Wellinger.
An exhibition in Opava called In the Footsteps of Sherlock Holmes has focused on how, in the 20th century, Arthur Conan Doyle's great detective was depicted, and in some cases misrepresented, in the Czech lands. The show, covering book illustration but also theater and film, was put together by art historian Tomáš Kolich. In our interview for this week's Arts, I began by asking Tomáš Kolich when it was that he first came across the great detective.
Well, I have to say I have never read anything with Sherlock until I was 20 years old. And I started because my girlfriend was reading that. And then we went together to see the film with Robert Downey Jr., Sherlock Holmes, from 2009. And it was the first time I saw quite a different version of Sherlock. So I was intrigued. I was wondering what's really the original version. Then I was looking in the books for descriptions. And I realized that the version of Robert Downey Jr. and Guy Ritchie is actually more faithful to the original stories. And because I am an art historian, I decided to write a paper about the depictions of Sherlock Holmes in Czech Republic.
Effectively your thesis, correct?
Bachelor's thesis,
your
yes.
Bachelor's thesis. And that is an interesting thing that you mentioned there, that Downey Jr.'s Holmes is more faithful to the original. We will discuss that. But first, what are some of the characteristics, as written by Conan Doyle, that, in your view, make Sherlock Holmes so unforgettable?
Maybe important is the pipe. And even though there are cigarettes or cigars in the book, I think the pipe is basically more distinctive from visual point of view. But also, Sherlock was smoking pipe when he was thinking about the crime. So the pipes becomes linked with the detective investigation. Something that's the reason. Also there are mentioned the violin, of course, but I think those attributes are not that important. And of course, the Deerstalker head will speak later about that, but I think that the pipe and the Deerstalker head, that's the two most important attributes of Sherlock that makes him quite prominent.
I wanted to ask you, do you think that as readers, many of us wanted to be like the detective, but ultimately feel more grounded like Watson? How does that interplay work?
The dynamic of those two characters were quite equal in the book, so I think that the reader could go back and forward amongst those two. But I think later, with the movies, the version of Watson becomes quite different. The Watson is much more dull, is fat, is ridiculous. I think during 20th century, the viewers were identifying themselves much more with the Sherlock. But I think in the recent versions, of course, the recent films, I think the Watson is more familiar because he's the one basically more reasonable, while Sherlock becomes the more irritating, the social.
When it was first announced, I remember my own feelings were that Jude Law would have been more physically the type for Sherlock Holmes, based on, I guess, the original Sidney Paget illustrations or the famous characters in the early films. But, of course, they turned that on its head. So in what ways is Downey Jr. and Jude Law, say, more faithful to the original?
I think the creators of those films realized that the version we have in our imaginations, it's not realistic anymore. So I think that's the reason why they were not so concerned with the looks of those two characters. That's why they didn't use any Deerstalker or the Ulster cloak or those typical attributes. I think they are more faithful in the way they are presenting themselves and their actions. That they are more realistic, energetic. Even the fight sequences, you actually can find in books that Sherlock was a good boxer, that he was master in certain martial arts, that he was strong. I had the feeling that he's actually a dangerous man, that he can really solve the crime, that he's not an old Victorian gentleman that's drinking tea, but I can believe that character. So I think it's good that we are changing the image now.
If we talk about the Czech Republic or former Czechoslovakia, how was the character depicted here? Because on Czech TV, they suggested that he went through many different transformations, some by accident. What are some of the different things that you came across?
Well, that's quite interesting, and that's why I choose the Czech Republic, not because it's my country, but because we have quite on the edge of detective world, if I can say so. So the detective novels came from Western Europe to Czech Republic, and there were quite some misunderstandings. I have to say there were different versions. So in books, the most important figure is the publisher Josef Richard Vilímek, and he had two strategies when it comes to illustration. He used the original illustrations from Sidney Paget, but also he had his own illustrator, Josef Riddich, and he was copying the illustrations of Sidney Paget. And we can see, for example, that even though he was a professional illustrator, he wasn't capable of to copy the Deerstalker head. So if we put two illustrations, one from Sidney Paget and one from Josef Friedrich, together, we can see there is Deerstalker in English one. In Czech one, there is weird version of Deerstalker. It's more like cap that you would wear in beach. It isn't clear. You can see that the Czech lands were not familiar with the Deerstalker head, and that's why there is no Deerstalker in Czech original illustration until the second half of the century. And they basically replaced it with a cap with one peak, and then becomes kind of Czech type of Sherlock Holmes. On the other hand, we can see in the illustrations quite deep understanding of other attributes. It's, for example, the case of the book from Maurice Leblanc. It's called Arsène Lupin contre Herlock Sholmes. And Josef Friedrich was illustrating this one also. And in the book, there is actually no description of Sherlock Holmes whatsoever. So every attribute in the illustration, there is quite a few. There is the magnifying glass, there is pipe. All this was from imagination of the illustrator, Josef Friedrich. So, but for example, in theater, we have we know about three plays that were from around 1907, 1910. And the version in theater was very different one. He was contemporary hero. There is no deal stalker. There is no pipe. He's smoking only cigarettes. And he's arresting the villain with two pistols in his hand. So basically, it was parallel. There was the version as we know it now, and there was a very different one. And also there were parodies. The first movie was from 1923. And the Sherlock Holmes, it's called Uno Spankere Fuchse, and Sherlock Holmes is only a funny character there that actually makes more problems, solves anything. And he's ridiculized. He has a pipe that's 30 centimeters long. His cap is for giant. So we can see that they did understand what's typical for Sherlock Holmes, and then they were making fun of it.
So they basically exaggerated those elements, you're saying.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating. Exactly. Because it must have been very interesting or rewarding for you to uncover these sort of different cultural aspects tacked on. Were there any other ways in which Sherlock was misrepresented, if I can use that word, or changed? In some instances, he became more like a Philip Marlowe type character.
Yes. In those illustrations from Between the Wars, we can see that there is the most prominent tendencies towards the image we know now. So the cap, one peak, checked pattern pipe, and so on. But there are rare exceptions. For example, one illustration from illustrator, he was called Chuta, and he depicted Sherlock Holmes as a film noir detective, basically, even though we are before the age of film noir. He's wearing a regular hat, regular cloak. If I would cover the letters Sherlock Holmes, you won't be actually able to recognize that character. It's a completely different version. But that's very rare. And after the 1950s, this completely disappears. And the appearance of Sherlock Holmes is basically the same.
Arthur Conan Doyle himself was never really fully satisfied with how Holmes was depicted. If that's
that is true.
If that's the case, then what you were saying there about looking for the many different faces of Holmes, I guess that really is in order then, because maybe he would be able to choose from one of the Sherlocks who are available today.
Well, yeah, he said in his autobiography that every version that he saw in his lifetime of Sherlock Holmes was quite different from the Holmes he imagined or he intended. I think that's okay that we produce so many versions. We can say we want to pay a tribute to the wishes of Arthur Conan Doyle and still show Sherlock as a Victorian gentleman, or we'll try to create more realistic version and experience the excitement of 1890s reader.
Art historian Tomasz Kolich ending that edition of The Arts by Jan Wellinger. And that brings us to the end of our English language broadcast. If you have any comments about today's program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Frankova. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.